This is Trade Tariffs in Texas, a special statewide call-in news program produced in cooperation with public radio stations across Texas. I'm David Martin Davies, host of The Source on Texas Public Radio. Today, tariffs on Mexico did not go into effect. President Trump had threatened them as a way to motivate Mexico to crack down on Central American immigrants coming into the United States. The tariffs had a potential to rock the Texas economy, but Trump says he reached a deal with Mexico, so no tariffs. But still, there are questions about tactics, the process, and our long-term trade relationship with Mexico. I'm joined by Tony Garza, the former U.S. ambassador to Mexico under President George W. Bush, to get his reaction about these developments. Mr. Ambassador, what's your observations about where we are with this tariff situation, and are you relieved today that we have no tariffs?
Yes. I mean, it was 9 days of a certain amount of anxiety around the threat. Interestingly, the threat of imposing 5% tariffs as of June 10th was made the very same day that Mexico had introduced the new legislation for the USMCA to their Senate. So against that positive step on the trade side, you had this ordeal, which was focused on immigration. So, listen, I'm hopeful that having gotten this issue off the table for now, that we can focus on the trade agreement. But look, Mexico has agreed to a number of things that I think are going to pose some real challenges in terms of implementation, in terms of stopping or trying to minimize the numbers of Central Americans coming through Mexico and into the United States. So the upshot at the announcement was that there were a couple of points, you know, the remain in Mexico for the Central Americans seeking asylum. Secondly, that there would be nearly 6,000 Mexican National Guard along their southern border. And then in 90 days, we'd be back to review the status of the implementation. So the uncertainty may be gone for now, but in 90 days, it's quite possible that we'll be right back where we were just a few days ago.
That's not a good situation if you are a businessman looking at exporting to the United States.
Not at all. I mean, obviously, if you're looking to export and tariffs might be placed on products coming out of Mexico into the United States, it's ultimately a cost first borne by consumers because you call it a tariff, but ultimately it's a tax as businesses are making decisions about supply chains. Listen, I mean, when things come out of Mexico, there's a lot of U.S. content in there. Upwards of 35-40% of the content in a Mexican manufactured good was made in the U.S. So, you know, making decisions about supply chains, you need more certainty when you're thinking about investments related to that. And so, yeah, it's not good for business. Interjecting tariffs into policy discussions unrelated to trade is generally not a good idea, and that's what the president has done here, and I think it's unfortunate, but let's hope we've got that behind us as relates to Mexico for now.
When President Trump ran for office, part of one of the platforms that he talked about in his rallies, that he was opposed to the North American Free Trade Agreement. He said it was bad for the United States, great for Mexico, but bad for the United States. Are we still feeling the impact of that belief?
Well, I think so. I think on some level, he simply doesn't understand trade or the benefits of trade. And listen, I mean, we're Texans, and we've seen it. And we appreciate what that border means, both the challenges and the opportunities, and the hundreds of thousands of jobs related to that ability to trade both with Mexico and Canada. And more broadly, I think what we have in North America with the United States, Canada, and Mexico is a platform that allows us to compete with China, which is truly more of a trade adversary than a strategic alliance that Mexico and Canada are. So I guess I want to appreciate what the president has said about trade, except that I know what it has meant to the United States, and I know what Canada and Mexico have meant to the United States in terms of making us more competitive, creating jobs, attracting investment, and growing opportunity for people, certainly in my home state of Texas and in the United States. So, listen, I see the China, thing that he's trying to get done with respect to intellectual property the way they have oftentimes manipulated the trade agreement. But when it comes to Mexico, you're talking about an ally and a very strategic partner.
Sure. Mexico, it's a long-time ally. It's a border. It's a neighbor. They have a market economy. We have a lot of integration there between Mexico. This is not China using the same tactics on Mexico that we're using on China. Seems like there's some sort of disconnect.
Yeah, I think it's short-sighted. I mean, I know the president has declared victory today, but I think that certainly the tariffs did inject some urgency into the discussions, and that's good. But if you look at the approaches to stop or to work with Mexico or stop the numbers of Central Americans coming up through Mexico to the United States, the approaches have been in place. The migrant protocols and the Remain in Mexico were in place as of December of last year. The additional troops along the southern border in place as of March of earlier this year. The increase in apprehensions and deportations by Mexico had already started to trend significantly up. So things were moving in the right direction. I'm not sure this tariff threat, this holding a gun to your neighbor's head was necessary. But we've got an agreement, and let's hope that we put this behind us for a while.
You have seen the positive effects of economic development for Mexico, and that pretty much ended migration from Mexico to the United States.
Well, you make a very good point, because the numbers, the movements of people up through Mexico and then making asylum claims in the United States, these are Central Americans. The net migration, both illegally from Mexico to the United States, that phenomena that we saw 15 and 20 years ago, is at about zero these days. So these are largely Central Americans. But the Mexican movement of Mexicans into the United States illegally is pretty much zero, and that's
it's zero or negative. But to learn the lesson, the lesson, if we can bring stability and some sort of prosperity to Central America, maybe we won't have this problem.
Yeah, I think that's very true. What I'd like to see in these 90 days, and this might sound a bit far afield from what we're talking about, but in these next 90 days, rather than just a microscope be placed on Mexico's efforts to stop Central Americans, I think a couple of things that I'd like to see Congress do, and that's, one, take a good hard look at the authority that they have delegated to the executive on tariffs. Because ultimately, in our Constitution, this is a congressional, not an executive prerogative. So I think that would be good. Secondly, I think Congress needs to take a long look at our asylum procedures and the resources committed to the processing, either the law under which claims can be made, and then the commitment to processing asylum claims more quickly. And then thirdly, we've got to take a step back and ask ourselves, what can we do in coordination with Mexico to address some of the underlying causes of migration out of Central America?
Tony Garza is the former U.S. ambassador to Mexico from 2002 to 2009. You're listening to Trade, Tariffs, and Taxes, a special statewide call-in news program produced in cooperation with public radio stations across Texas. We're going to take a break, and we will continue the conversation when we come back. This is the Trade, Tariffs, and Taxes, a Talk of Texas call-in special, and a collaborative of public radio stations in Texas. A shout-out to listeners on North Texas public radio stations, Houston Public Media, and KUT Austin. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about President Trump's threat of tariffs on Mexico and what that means for the Texas economy. Call in, give us your take. The number is 1-800-622-8977. We have a panel of experts with us. Jerry Schwabel is here. He's Executive Vice President at the International Bank of Commerce in Laredo and a member of the U.S.-Mexico CEO Dialogue and the U.S.-Mexico Economic Council. Also with us is Mary Beth Sheridan, a correspondent covering Mexico and Central America for the Washington Post. Matthew Rooney is on with us as well. He's the director of the Economic Growth Program at the George W. Bush Institute. He's in the KERA studios in Dallas. Again, the number to call in is 1-800-622-8977. We have a Twitter hashtag, a TX tariffs. Use that if you have a question or a comment. Jerry Schwabel of IBC, so your bank, has made it a specialty to be able to do business on both sides of the border. If those tariffs have gone into effect, what impact would that have had on Texas trade with Mexico?
Devastating, really, for us in Texas, for almost every community in Texas, it would have been a tremendous negative blow to our state.
Well, how integrated is the Texas and Mexico economy?
Well, Mexico is the number one trading partner for Texas. And since NAFTA, it's become even much more integrated as we continue to compete against other parts of the world. So what's happened in cities like all along the border, from El Paso down to Brownsville, have become such an important part of the supply chain component of this north-south trade.
And but a lot of people just aren't really up to speed that Texas and Mexico have this integrated trade. We hear some talk from President Trump that we have maybe a trade imbalance with Mexico. He says that Mexico is taking advantage of U.S. trade, but that may or may not be the case.
Well, it's important for everyone to understand there's a difference between trade in goods and trade in services. And most of the deficit that you hear about is in the trade in goods and versus trade in services. For us, trade in services means transportation, logistics, the whole gamut of the supply chain from point to point, from point of raw material to the finished product. So that's when you talk about the whole integration of the supply chain.
Sure. Also, like when you talk about like Mexican beer, a lot of people drink Mexican beer. They like Coronas and other products. A lot of that is the hops and barley for those products are grown in the United States.
That's correct. Correct. So you take what Grupo Modelo buys, the barley in Iowa, the Midwest, and then becomes a part of a product that's basically brewed, done in Mexico. Then it comes back into the United States in a bottle that you and I enjoy, any chance we can, and drink the beer.
So it just shows you how there's a benefit, and some of the numbers that we look at don't tell the full story.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to go to Mary Beth Sheridan, reporter for The Washington Post, who's been covering this issue with the tariffs. What is the mood of Mexico with this development that President Trump basically didn't put it into effect? Was great relief?
Yes, I would say the dominant emotion is relief. Mexicans really rallied around their president, López Obrador, who emphasized that the priority for Mexico was to reach a deal that would deter these tariffs. Mexico's economy is fairly soft right now. It actually shrunk a little bit in the first quarter. And I think the president understands the tremendous impact tariffs could have and the threat that those tariffs could pose to the new version of NAFTA. So he saw it as an enormous threat for Mexico, and I think persuaded Mexicans, or at least many of them, that cutting a deal to avoid the tariffs would be the best course.
And the deal that was cut, some people are reporting, the New York Times reported today, that many of these items had already been negotiated by Mexico.
Yeah, to be honest, our reporting has told us a different story. So the Mexican government internally has been talking for some time about what it should do about the southern border. You know, there's just been a rising flow of Central Americans. So indeed, they did tell the American officials back in March they wanted to do something. But our understanding is the numbers that they've committed, 6,000 National Guardsmen, and the speed in which they're going to commit them is really quite a different story. In addition, the program on the northern, that's on the southern border with Guatemala, on Mexico's northern border with the United States, it's agreed to take in far more asylum applicants. These are migrants who want to apply for asylum in the U.S. Mexico's agreed to sort of host them while they go through a process that could take months. And we're now looking at, you know, at the beginning when Mexico agreed to this program, the migrant protection protocols, it was really accepting a couple dozen of these asylum seekers a day to come back from the U.S. and stay in Mexico. Now they're talking about 1,000 people a day. So this is really a big shift.
So Matthew Rooney, director of the Economic Growth Program at George W. Bush Institute, you wrote a piece a while ago. It says, tariffs are great if you like raising prices, undermining jobs, and inhibiting innovation. So sounds to me like you're not a fan of tariffs, but are they even become even more negative with a major trading partner like Mexico?
Oh, did I let it slip that I didn't like tariffs? I was trying to keep it under wraps. Thank you, David, for that question. Yeah, it's a tax on ourselves is what it really is. As Ambassador Garza mentioned at the outset of the show, about 40% of what we import from Mexico represents content that originated in the United States. In effect, the supply chain is so integrated that you have a situation where a vehicle, for example, what you and I think of as an American vehicle, may cross the U.S.-Mexico or, for that matter, the U.S.-Canada border 6 times before it reaches the showroom floor. And so if we were to tax everything that comes in from Mexico, we would in effect be taxing our Fords and Chevrolets and General Motors cars 6 times. As the assembly makes its way back and forth across the border. So, and that tax gets added on to the cost of production, which doesn't only run up the cost of cars to the American consumer, it also reduces the ability of our automobile industry to compete in other markets around the world. And so it's really, a colossal own goal to tax imports in that way.
But President Trump has said, Matthew, that this is would be profitable for the United States to adopt these tariffs against Mexico. It would bring jobs back to the United States, and it would raise revenue.
Well, it'll certainly raise revenue. There's a big debate, obviously, about where that revenue comes from. It certainly gets paid by the importer and, in some sense, passed through to the consumer. Although, you can imagine that the exporter may cut his prices a little bit in order to preserve a market relationship with a business partner. So at the end of the day, I think the economics are that it's essentially the price elasticities that determine who actually pays the tariff. But the fact is that it does represent a flow of revenue to the Treasury. So that's true. It is nonetheless an impediment to the ability of the industry of the United States to compete around the world, and therefore it's of questionable value.
Now let me go to the phones. The number is 1-800-622-8977 if you want to call in and join our conversation. Rodrigo is on the line, and Rodrigo, welcome to the Trade Tariffs and Taxes Talk Special. You're on the air. Rodrigo, you there?
Yes, I apologize. I just wanted to ask a quick question. Is this really the precedent that we want to set as far as when we negotiate with trades and stuff with our neighbors especially, but with other countries as well?
Okay, good question. Thank you for that, Rodrigo. Let me go back to Jerry Schwebel with the International Bank of Commerce. You do a lot of business with Mexico. You also are very active in Washington, D.C., educating our lawmakers about, how complicated the border trade can be. Do you think that this is something that, they're not getting and that what's happening here could be negative going forward?
Well, it's been an ongoing education. Every time you have a change of government, whether it's congressional or even the leadership of the executive branch, that's an ongoing job. Sometimes we think that once they get elected, they just sit on the chair, they know everything. But for us, that especially for those of us that live on the border, we have to not only have to educate them on how the process of living and working on the border is and how it impacts the national impact of the way we do business and the impact to Iowas and the Michigans, what it means. That's an ongoing education.
But connecting non-economic policy to economic policy, that seems to be a slippery path to get onto. Matthew Rooney with the George W. Bush Institute, is this even worse than what you already don't like?
Yeah, it is risky when you mix trade issues with other issues, especially security issues. In general, the United States has taken the approach that it's better to keep trade issues in the trade lane and security issues in the security lane. So it is a bit risky. It could come back to bite us. For example, one of the longstanding disputes or points of friction between the United States and Mexico is the flow of weapons, especially automatic weapons, from the United States into Mexico. And the Mexicans have always, asked the United States to help clamp down on that flow. And the United States has traditionally said, well, your border's your problem, and guns circulate widely in the United States, and we don't see the issue. Well, what if Mexico were to turn around tomorrow and say, well, we're going to levy a 5% tariff on everything that comes in from the United States until the United States stops the flow of guns? That's the kind of thing you open yourself up to when you go down that road.
Yeah, but, you know, given the size of the U.S. economy versus the size of Mexico's economy, like there's a saying that if with the U.S. economy sneezes, Mexico economy gets pneumonia because of the disproportion. Matthew, it's not likely that something like that could actually happen.
Well, it's true that our economy is larger than theirs, and in that sense, they need us more than we need them. But we do need them in certain ways, and there are the main thing I think that would be the result of such a thing, where specific would be that specific industries in the United States would be particularly impacted. So the car industry, in particular, would be acutely impacted by that because they depend so much on those Mexican production locations to feed their United States production chains. Also the Europeans, you know, the BMW and Mercedes that have big plants in the United States. BMW, the largest value exporter of vehicles from the United States, from its factory in South Carolina, they also feed themselves from a Mexican supply chain. So that industry would be negatively impacted very quickly by such a move by Mexico. And I think, excuse me, you would have an impact. It would arguably be less than the impact of us taxing everything coming in from Mexico, but it would nonetheless be an impact that I think would demand the attention of the U.S. government.
Mary Beth Sheridan with the Washington Post covering Mexico, Central America. There's like a 90-day, there is a 90-day clock. I don't know when it started. Was it today? And what happens if all of these measures are not met? And is Mexico very focused on that?
So Mexico is super focused on that. The timetable has certainly, riveted their attention. And, of course, President Trump is threatening to reimpose tariffs if he doesn't see a really significant drop in the number of migrants reaching the United States. So one of the things that's being talked about today was that if the numbers don't go down enough, and they're going to start looking at the results 45 days from now, so really very soon, there's talk of establishing a new asylum regime in the region whereby migrants who are seeking asylum would be required to make their application in the first country, the first safe country they reached, and that would be considered, for Guatemalans, that would be considered Mexico. So in other words, Guatemalans reaching the U.S. border under this arrangement would no longer be eligible to seek asylum, and that is the mechanism that many of these migrants are using. They're petitioning for asylum. That means they often are released into the U.S. So if there's now a mechanism, or if there will be in the future, whereby they no longer are eligible to do that, that could be quite a dramatic change. And that's what is on the horizon if there's not a very dramatic drop.
All right. We are going to take a break. We're talking trade tariffs in Texas from the Collaborative of Texas Public Radio Stations. Stay tuned. Welcome back to a special talk of Texas, trade, tariffs, and Texas. I'm David Martin Davies. We're part of a collaborative of public radio stations across the state, including KACU in Abilene and KETR in Commerce. What's your view on the way President Trump is using tariffs, particularly with Mexico? We invite you to join our conversation. The number is 1-800-622-8977. You can also give us a hashtag, TX Tariffs. We're watching that, so you can tweet comments and questions, and we'll put them on the air. Let's go to the phones, and we have Matt, and Matt is from Euless. Matt, hi. Welcome to Trade Tariffs in Texas. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for putting on the program.
All right. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. So the best argument that I have heard in favor of tariffs regards like military and strategic defense. So like sort of an infant industry argument for things like steel and food that would be needed by our military in a war. In general, I'm skeptical of this argument because I just find it difficult to believe that a country that's making itself poor for decades at a time would be, you know, better able to perform in the case of a war, God forbid. But I would like to hear your all's response to that argument, which I've heard a lot.
All right, Matt, thank you for that. Matthew Rooney, he's the director of the Economic Growth Program at George W. Bush Institute. Some protectionist measures, tariffs, in order to take care of some nationally important industries.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose in extremis, you know, in the event of an actual conflict, there could well be situations where you would not want the kind of open trading market to determine economic outcomes, right? Where if you're actually involved in ramping up to carry out a war, you wouldn't want kind of steel trade to be running up the price of steel. You know, in the 1940s, the United States used all kinds of trade controls in order to make sure that we had the materiel that we needed to make all those boats that landed at D-Day 75 years ago. So there's something to that. But when you're not in a conflict, to think about it that way, you know, in a way actually makes a conflict more likely. And on the other hand, there's a fairly convincing argument to be made that countries that trade freely with each other don't tend to fight each other. And that's particularly true when all the parties are committed to liberalization of trade. As soon as one of the parties starts to pull back from liberalization of trade, that truism that countries that trade don't fight each other, that truism doesn't really hold as strongly. But in an environment such as we're in now, particularly, you know, the United States surrounded by friendly countries, Canada and Mexico are our allies. They're not going to be our enemies anytime soon. And they hold most of that production that we don't hold. So a lot of our raw material for steel and aluminum and other strategic minerals comes from Canada. So the idea that we need to protect our national security by walling ourselves off from Canadian steel, for example, is actually kind of short-sighted.
All right. Jerry Schwebel with IBC, International Bank of Commerce. As you've seen a lot of the blossoming of trade between the United States and Mexico, I mean, have you seen the benefits of that as Mexico has developed, as a country, has become less of a problem for the United States?
Well, absolutely. I think Mexico, in the last 25 years, has taken major steps of reforms, you know, to strengthen their economy and really to become more of a global trading partner. And we've seen it on the border as we see the goods come back and forth. At our end, a community like Laredo or like Brownsville, we had unemployment rates prior to NAFTA, they were the double digits. And today, those are below 4%, below 5%. So if you look at, as it relates to jobs, which is really what these trade policies are, you know, you've got to create jobs or protect the jobs of your country. The economic activity really in itself is what blossoms and adds value to the quality of life of every community. So we have been the direct beneficiaries. Texas has been the direct beneficiaries, not just the border, but cities like San Antonio, you know, the NAFTA city, and cities like Dallas and Houston, as a result of this, what really has become a fully integrated model of how we could buy and sell to each other using the resources and the strengths of each country.
And as Mexico became a more developed country, growing a middle class, they had an appetite for American products.
Absolutely. The purchasing power of the Mexican became much, much, much greater. And we in the United States continued, as we are the largest consumer in the world as well, too. How do we take the strengths of Mexico, the strengths of Canada combined so that we can compete on a global basis with Asia and Europe?
Let's go back to the phone lines, and let's go to Nick. And Nick is calling from Austin. Welcome to Trade Tariffs in Texas. You're on the air.
Oh, hello.
Hey, Nick. Go ahead.
My question would be, how would the state comptroller determine the potential effect of tariffs on the Texas economy, but usually expressed through the biennial revenue report?
Okay. Nick, good question. That's any idea on how much this could cost us. Jerry Schwebel from IBC.
Well, we in Texas, you take the border communities, we base our way of tracking the impact of the, you know, our business with Mexico is by sales tax receipts, ad valorem taxes. In our particular case, even on the border, we have tolls because we have bridges. So those are part of the basic, the budgets of these communities. The purchasing power of the rising middle class of Mexico, the impact of the shoppers in San Antonio, San Marcos, or Houston, that's tracked by the sales tax receipts. And when they come in, they not only shop, but they stay in hotels. But they also, I think one important element is that the openness between the relationship between our countries of Mexico and the United States, you're finding Mexican companies also willing to invest heavily in Texas, creating jobs, building distribution centers, and at the end of the day, those are investments that are good for Texas, add value to the economy of Texas.
Our number is 1-800-622-8977. We're also watching the hashtag TXTariffs. You can call in or you can give us a comment. We want to hear from you as we talk about these developments with the Texas economy and the tariffs and our trade with Mexico. Steve is calling from Austin. Steve, welcome to Trade Tariffs and Texas.
Okay, my question is, if your panel could comment on my theory, is it possible President Trump's threat of tariffs is not about economics, that is to show his base as being tough on immigration, and that actually it's not so much that he really wants to do it, but it's a chance for him to declare victory without really having to follow through on it.
All right. Mary Beth Sheridan, correspondent covering Mexico and Central America for The Washington Post. You might be able to help us out to decipher the political aspect of this multi-layered story.
Sure. I think one of the concerns of Mexicans is that, indeed, President Andrés Manuel López Obrador has said all along, he's tried to kind of parry or put off the insults and the threats from Trump by telling his own domestic audience, oh, this is really internal U.S. politics. We're not going to respond. We're not going to get into a big fight. And he's more or less successfully convinced the public that that's the way to go. But there's great worry in Mexico that a lot of these actions are related to President Trump's reelection campaign, and that over the next year, as is often said here, Mexico is going to be a piñata. So there really is a great sense of worry. I think the Mexicans do, the government does believe they have to do more to get control of migration because the flows have really picked up. But there's a great worry that this is, at the end of the day, related quite a bit, really, to the president's reelection effort.
And people who, in the United States, media consumers, do you think that they're really aware, Jerry Schwebel from IBC, of how important trade is with Mexico?
I think that there's needs to be more education and an understanding of what this trade policy means to someone who lives in the Midwest or Northeast. You hear the rhetoric. Sometimes it's more negative than positive. And we have to do a better job of telling the positive things about this trade relationship with our trade partners. And that starts off sometimes in Washington, filters down to the state level. Our governors and our state representatives have got to really boil down to the issue of what it means to your district, what it means to your constituents, to the jobs that are tied directly to this north-south trade.
But people look at these numbers that are coming from the Border Patrol, 144,000 undocumented immigrants on the southwest border in May, largest monthly total in 13 years. That seems to be a full stop sentence for a lot of people.
Sure, sure. That's understandable. We live it. Those of us that we're seeing this every day in our communities up along the border. But at the end of the day, you've got policy that's been set by the members of Congress that really, you know, we talk about the crisis on the border. Well, I guess the crisis really is in Washington, that's what we say, that we can't get issues resolved in passing the laws that are going to impact the changing times of what we're facing today with the changing of the migrant coming as a family unit versus as a one-person unit that we had in the past. And you throw out all these numbers, and they sound they're actually very real, but how do we cope and how do we adapt and how do we find common sense solutions to attack those issues of today? not with the laws that we passed 20, 30 years ago.
We're talking about trade tariffs and taxes. What is going to happen next? The tariffs that were planned for today did not go in effect. They were threatened by President Trump to motivate Mexico to take steps to get involved, be cracking down on some of the migrants coming up from Central America, coming through Mexico and coming up to the southern border. He is very much involved in trying to control that story and that optics, that narrative, but is using Texas tariffs, tariffs that would impact the Texas economy, the way to go about that. We want to hear from you. The number is 1-800-622-8977, 1-800-622-8977. Trade, tariffs, and taxes continues after this quick break. You're listening to Trade, Tariffs, and Taxes, a Talk of Texas special call-in program. We're talking about the tariffs that were supposed to go in effect today, but, you know, many people are glad that they didn't. These were tariffs that were targeting Mexico, looking to motivate them, according to President Trump, to take steps against the immigration situation that we have on our southern border. We invite you to call in with your take on the situation, 1-800-622-8977. Let's go to the phones with Tony in San Antonio. Tony, go right ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. Hello. Yes, I think for a long time we've been too concerned about offending Mexico by what we say or what we do, whatever it is like that. And, you know, the thing is that, you know, Mexico needs to become more self-sufficient and learn how to take care of their own people. They, you know, they're like the next-door neighbors. They move in, and you're glad to help them and whatever it is that they need for the time being. But after a while, you tell them you need to start taking care of your own needs and not depend on your neighbor.
All right, Tony, let me go to another caller really quick, and this is Helena from Houston. Helena, go right ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
The question I had is basically I don't understand how one person has so much power to directly tax people, and it almost feels like we're back in the 1700s where the king in England was taxing our tea. You know, we stood up for that when we said we don't want direct taxes. And I just don't understand how maybe, you know, Trump supporters and, I mean, most of us don't necessarily, like, see this direct tax. And, you know, why is it that, you know, people keep supporting this?
Okay.
When they are personally suffering.
Helena, thank you for the question. It's a really good question because we do need to get to that point. Matthew Rooney with the Economic Growth Program at George W. Bush Institute. How does President Trump have all of this authority when we know that in the Constitution, that's authority that belongs to Congress?
It's a great question, and I think it's worth asking and worth considering. Your earlier interviewee, Tony Garza, mentioned it. So the Constitution does assign responsibility, authority over trade policy to the Congress. What happened was, starting in the 1930s, when there was a series of drastic increases in tariffs that resulted from a kind of a political log-rolling process that unfolded inside the United States Congress, where members would say, well, I'll support a tariff on your pet industry in your district if you'll support a tariff that protects my pet industry in my district. And so that created a ratchet that made tariffs go up and up and up. And that action, called the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Bill, 1930, actually aggravated the Depression, made the Depression deeper and longer than it otherwise would have been. That's at least the consensus today. And so as a result, the Congress started to delegate that authority to the president, the authority to make trade policy, to the president under circumstances defined by the Congress. And essentially, the Congress directed the president go out and negotiate reciprocal reductions in tariffs. In other words, we'll reduce our tariffs if the trading partner will reduce their tariffs. And that created a series of negotiations where the executive branch went out and negotiated these tariff reductions that, you know, later became the World Trade Organization and led to a situation where the executive was generally reducing tariffs and the Congress could say to its district, well, I couldn't protect your tariff because the president made me cut it. That worked fine as long as the president was less protectionist than the Congress, and in general, that has been the case.
But Matthew, to this point, though, isn't that the president has emergency powers as well if he thinks it's for the national security that he can put in tariffs? And he's called the border a national emergency.
Yes. So that's a separate authority that represents a delegation of authority that properly belongs to the Congress, a delegation of authority to the president. So, you know, the other tariffs that we've talked about or that have been talked about, the tariffs on China and so on, the previous tariffs on Canada and Mexico, those were, listed under different sections of law, but they all represented a use of tariff policy in a way that the Congress actually didn't intend. And I think, in general, the Congress, over the last 70 years, the Congress has delegated that authority on the assumption that the executive was able to be more open market-minded than any individual member of Congress.
Right.
And so that's the situation that exists.
And we'll see moving forward if Congress takes action to claw that power back. Let's go to another caller. This is Miles in Dallas. Miles, you're on the air with trade tariffs in Texas. Go ahead.
Yeah, my question is, it seems like there's a lot of trade-offs, some potential negatives. What silver lining or what potential positive is there out of this?
Okay, let's go to Jerry Schwebel with IBC Bank, and you're also working on the negotiations for the U.S.
MCA.
Not as rhymey as NAFTA, you know. So, but still, it's going to be more important than NAFTA. So,
in Spanish, they even call it TMAC. So, it's trying to figure that one out between Spanish and English. Yeah.
What is the upside of what's going on?
Well, the upside is definitely that this USMCA is supposed to be an improvement of NAFTA 1.0. And you're bringing it up to today's times where you're adding components that were not included in the first NAFTA. The energy chapter, for example, is a key for Texas. You had digital trade or e-commerce that was not included.
I don't even think they had iTunes when they did NAFTA.
Yeah, well, you go back 25 years ago, Amazon was a river in Brazil. Google was something you scribbled. And Apple was a fruit. That's what we always say. So things change. And in 25 years, this is exactly what USMCA is intended to do, an improvement of the prior agreement by bringing it up to today's times.
But also something that could come positive from shining a light on what's happening right now is making people aware of how important Mexico is to trade with Texas and the greater United States.
Absolutely. And as actually the three countries grow and continue to prosper globally, and they become their own particular, network of strength, like Mexico is a major manufacturing hub for the automotive sector. And for Texas, all of those automotive parts or electronic parts come through Texas, through our 28 ports. We are direct beneficiaries as well as that. So automotive sector of Mexico being so strong, the natural resources of Canada, and then, of course, the United States being the largest consumer of the world.
Another caller. This is Clint from Austin. Clint, go right ahead. You're on trade tariffs in Texas.
Thank you. Appreciate the objectivity of the answers to the questions. I have a very quick one. Given all that's in our sky now with the issues of the wall, tariffs, our taxes, whatever, are we allowing ourselves to be too distracted away from the issues that were raised by Smedley Butler and the economic hitman? In other words, the impact or adverse impact of U.S. foreign policy is maybe as much at the root of much of this as anything else, particularly with families leaving their homes. I'd just like to have a few comments on that, please.
Sure. Mary Beth Sheridan, sorry I haven't come back to you in a while. As a reporter for The Washington Post covering Mexico and Central America, I wonder about the destabilization for Central America and Mexico with just having this this issue arise, and that's a problem.
Right. Yeah, I think that when we talk about a silver lining to the crisis, I think it's obviously not really good for anybody to have large numbers of people flowing in an irregular migration to the United States. It's not good for Central America or Mexico or the U.S. But I would emphasize that there's going to be long-term consequences from all this, and I think one is Mexicans have really been expressing a lot of doubt and questions about how reliable of a partner the United States is going to be for trade and other things if all of a sudden they can kind of change their mind and all of a sudden sort of hold a sort of Damocles over the heads of of the Mexicans. I also think, to the caller's point, there were wars in Central America in the 80s where the U.S. was quite involved, and there's, of course, a long history of U.S. involvement in Central America that did lead to consequences. You know, so some of what we're seeing, you know, when you think about the poverty, the inequality, the violence in Central America, some of that does reflect on some level, you know, U.S. involvement in the past. And I think, you know, part of U.S. involvement in more recent years has been a real effort to boost democracy, development, and so on. And I think with the idea in the long term that people would not feel the need to flee. So I think one of the issues that you know, we are looking at right now is that perhaps understandably the Trump administration wants short-term answers. They are getting just a tremendous surge at the border, and they can't, you know, only look to the long term. But I do think that, you know, one wants to be very careful about only looking to the short term and having, militarized police and so on, because what's driving folks to leave their homes in part are these, long-standing tensions.
Sure, but when the United States cuts off foreign aid to Central America and also ends TPS, temporary protected status, for people from Central America, and also that's a destabilization for those countries, Mary Beth Sheridan.
It makes it very tough. They're very fragile economies. And I think, you know, if you look at something like Mexico and how illegal migration has dropped dramatically in Mexico, I mean, it still happens, of course, to the U.S., but just a dramatic decline. Well, part of that is Mexico's, you know, GDP per capita is $9,000, right? So people, you know, have less incentive to leave. You look at Guatemala, it's half of that. It's $4,500. So, you know, you look at very tough economies, and you look at really places with very fragile institutions, terrible security situations. So, you know, as you say, I mean, to only look at this from the point of view of security or of a police solution, I think in the long term may not be very successful.
Jerry Schwebel with IBC Bank, last comments.
Well, I think it's important to look back at history and what was just commented by Ms. Sheridan. You know, we have a history in the United States of doing that. We canceled the Bracero program during the Johnson and Kennedy administration, left Mexico pretty much, you know, with all these workers, displaced workers on the Mexican side. Those policies that change from one day to the other or from one year to the other are disruptive. And sometimes we need to go back and pull back and look at history and say, how do we come out of those situations? How do we resolve the issues? And we have common sense dialogue and discussions.
All right. Jerry Schwebel is Executive Vice President of the International Bank of Commerce based in Laredo. Matthew Rooney has been with us. He's the Director of Economic Growth Program at George W. Bush Institute. Mary Beth Sheridan, correspondent for the Washington Post in Mexico, Central America. This is Trade Tariffs in Texas of the Texas Collaborative Stations. I'm David Martin Davies from Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This live statewide call-in special was hosted and produced by David Martin Davies, Kim Johnson, Dallas Williams, and Dan Katz. Production support from Wayne Coble, Ruben Garcia, Jan Ross Piedad, Fernando Ortiz Jr., and Bree Kirkham. This program was made possible by a collaboration between Texas Public Radio, KERA North Texas, Houston Public Media, and KUT Austin.